So I'm really delighted to introduce my friend Aryadi to you this evening. Aryadi and I have known each other as long as we've been in Norwich, because we actually arrived in Norwich about the same time, in 2008. And we really got to know each other working together downstairs here at the Buddhist Centre. And I really see Aryadi in sort of three contexts. The biggest is your Buddhist context in the Sangha. The way that you contribute to the Sangha, either by volunteering, by showing up with loyalty, with fidelity, with enthusiasm, just without fail, you're always here. And your dedication to your practice, both in the way that you study, the way that you understand the Dharma, which I think really reflects your name. Aryadi was ordained earlier this year at Akashavana, which is a women's retreat center in Spain, and she was given the name meaning noble wisdom. So this name can both reflect this understanding of the Dharma in both a personal way, but also I think it really reflects Aryadi's commitment to her friendship. And her friendships in the Sangha, and I've often heard her described, and I've certainly experienced this, as a real loyal friend. You give gifts to your friends. You are always giving, whether it's time, whether it's things. You give the gift of the Dharma. You give talks. You share your practice with others. And you're also incredibly supportive when your friends are going through difficulties. And I've experienced this both myself, and I've also seen this in your relationship with friends in your GFR group, but also just in the wider Sangha. You're here, you're present, you're embodying the Dharma. I look forward to hearing about what you have to say about Amoghasiddhi this evening.
Thank you.
Great.
I think I will leave this actually. It will be. Right. I'll begin by asking everyone to close their eyes and imagine a deep midnight blue sky, unblemished, unending. Not the harsh cold sky of a British winter, but the rich warmth of an unknown foreign land. You find yourself in a dense forest of pine trees. Sounds emanate from all directions. Mysterious, indecipherable sounds. Is it a bird? A mammal? What lurks there? Your fear expands into a frightening narrative of monsters and demons, but you plow on regardless. What choice do you have? You're here now and have to make the best of it. You catch a glimpse of a faint light in the distance. As you progress, the light expands, growing stronger and brighter. Pressing forward still further, you find yourself in a clearing, at the centre of which, on a pale green lotus throne, sits the Buddha Amoghasiddhi. The brilliant dark green light of his body illumines the entire space. No leaf or creature can escape his soothing radiance. Amoghasiddhi is attired in reddish-orange coloured robes, richly embroidered in gold. His right arm is held up and the palm of his hand faces outwards in the mudra of fearlessness. His left hand rests in his lap, and standing upright in the palm is a golden Vishvajra, or universal vajra, a double vajra. The expression on his face is of fearless compassion. Supporting the lotus throne are two Shangshang birds, creatures, half man, half bird, with rainbow wings. They clash cymbals in ecstatic bliss. Thoughts of monsters and demons begin to wane. Their forms shrink in the green glow. Did they ever really exist in any tangible form, except in your own imagination? Omega Siddhi represents the aspect of enlightenment that is fearlessness. Head of the karma family, karma being action, he symbolizes a compassionate and spontaneous response to whatever is needed, whenever it is needed. The double vajra is an emblem of complete integration of all our energies, energy which is free to move in any or all directions. Feel free to keep your eyes closed or open them as you wish. Omega Siddhi's name means unobstructed success, of itself suggesting a momentum that cannot be held back or contained, an unstoppable, inexhaustible flow of energy, a life force that must evolve, grow, change, transform. That the spiritual poison he seeks to tame is envy reinforces this, for envy dissipates, splinters energy, as we seek to look outside of ourselves for what we crave, instead of looking within ourselves to actualize our own potential. Envy is competitive, does not know or seek contentment. Omega Siddhi's wisdom is all accomplishing wisdom, that is freed of the restrictions of grasping, seeing beyond the duality we all act out within our own lives, the separation of self and other, subject and object, me here, you out there. A wisdom that sees there is no self to protect, just an endless flow of conditions, a spontaneous awareness of how to respond to each sentient being in a way that is of benefit to that individual. The Buddha of the North and of the Midnight Sky touches on our fascination with the cremation ground, ghouls and ghosts long popular in Eastern and Western culture. Ghoulish overtones have even found their way into opera. Benjamin Britten's The Turn of the Screw adapts the Henry James novella of the same name. And that there is a certain frisson of nervous excitement that draws us to the dark, especially midnight. Just think of how many trips you had on the ghost train at the funfair as a child. The formless shapes and sounds, unseen, unknown. For Omega Siddhi is the voice that speaks to our inner shadows, to those haunting creatures within ourselves that tell us, no, you can't, you shan't, that would deny our inner resolve, that taunt us with fear and doubt, that keep us hidden from the higher self that we may become. The late psychologist Susan Jeffers wrote in her book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, we cannot escape fear. We can only transform it into a companion that accompanies us in all our exciting adventures. It is not an anchor holding us transfixed in one spot. Fear is a basic human survival instinct. All of us have our own fears, conscious or otherwise. Spiders, heights. My own childhood fear was water. Attempts to swim the length of a pool to obtain a much desired swimming badge didn't get beyond the 6 foot mark, and the embarrassment of being pulled out of the pool by a teacher. Fear is the driving force behind greed, hatred and delusion. The cock, the snake and pig. That's the nub of the Tibetan wheel of life that keeps us going round and round the circle of existence, repeating the same old habitual patterns. Birth, death, rebirth, that keep us trapped in a cycle of conditioned existence. Because we are afraid, we respond from a place of craving or aversion. Fear shapes our decisions, can control our lives. We are a cautious race of sensory instinct, and we go with a safe option, with what is clear, tangible, if you like, real. Remaining in a job, town, or relationship that causes us distress, even unhappiness, can be preferable to taking a risk with the unknown. And we look to the group to endorse our way of thinking, being, to affirm our existence. Rarely do we stand alone in any meaningful sense. In the Survey of Buddhism, Sangharakshita writes, "Like happiness, fearlessness in the highest sense of the term is unattainable by material means. Fear being essentially fear for oneself can be overcome only with the elimination of the ego sense. Absolute fearlessness is synonymous with enlightenment, and the giving of fearlessness equivalent, ultimately, to the conferring of enlightenment." And there is really something quite heroic about those who come along to a Buddhist centre for the first time, for example, through a meditation class, an innate unspoken desire to change their lives for the better, to find a place of contentment that the mirage of mundane everyday existence has simply failed to deliver. There is a quality of fearlessness in that step, because it is moving into the unknown, the untested. The Pali scriptures speak of the historical Buddha's fearlessness, of how Shakyamuni, on occasions, put himself in potentially dangerous situations, yet his enlightened state had taken him beyond fear. The most well-known of these is the Buddha's encounter with Angulimala. "Thus I heard, once when the Blessed One was living at Savatthi, a bandit had appeared in the realm of King Pasenadi of Kosala. He was called Angulimala, that is to say, finger necklace. And he was murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, and merciless to all living beings. Villages, towns, and districts were laid waste by him. He went on murdering people, and he wore their fingers as a necklace. One morning, the Blessed One took his bowl and outer robe, and he went into Savatthi for alms. When he had wandered for alms in Savatthi, and had returned from his alms round after the meal, he set his resting place in order, and then, carrying his bowl and outer robe, he took the road to where Angulimala then was. Cowherds, shepherds, farmers, and travellers saw the Blessed One, and they said, 'Do not take that road, monk. On that road there is the bandit Angulimala. Men have come by that road in bands of 10, 20, 30, and even 40 from time to time. But they have all fallen into the hands of Angulimala.' When this was said, the Blessed One went on in silence. A second time the same thing happened, and the Blessed One went on in silence. A third time the same thing happened, and the Blessed One went on in silence. Seeing him coming in the distance, the robber Angulimala thought, 'It is wonderful, it is marvellous indeed. Men have come along this road in bands of even 40 from time to time, and now this monk comes alone and unaccompanied. One would think he had been fated to come. Why should I not take this monk's life?' Seizing his sword and shield and buckling on his bow and quiver, he went in pursuit of the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One performed a feat of supernormal power, such that Angulimala, going as fast as he could, was unable to catch up with the Blessed One, who was walking at his normal pace. Then Angulimala thought, 'It is wonderful. It is marvellous. I used to catch up with a galloping elephant and seize it, or a galloping horse, or a galloping chariot, or a galloping deer. But although I am going as fast as I can, I am unable to catch up with this monk, who is walking at his normal pace.' He paused and called out, 'Stop, monk. Stop, monk. I have stopped Angulimala. Do you stop also? Angulimala, I have stopped forever, for swearing violence to every living being, but you have no restraint towards anything. So that is why I have stopped and you have not. The quality of fearlessness manifests in the way we transform ourselves and our lives in accordance with our highest values. We strive to practice the five precepts, and for swearing violence to every living being, we become vegetarians or even vegans. We practice generosity, step off the bandwagon of consumerism, and look to creative ways of utilising our free time, our resources, perhaps volunteering at the Buddhist centre, fundraising for a good cause, or taking up painting or yoga. We go on retreat and find a stillness and simplicity. We connect with nature. Above all, we begin to explore our own truths, see the conditioned patterns of thought and behaviour for what they are, a means of self-clinging that will do little to protect us from the essential truth that all phenomena come into being through a set of conditions and cease to be when those conditions change. For what we fear above all is old age, sickness, and death, the three sights in the Buddha's own life that led to his journey to enlightenment. Yet if we turn towards our experience, in a sense, get out of our own way, embrace impermanence, sickness, even death, we can discover life. Those of us who were privileged to know the late dearly missed Dharmacharini Dayavandana were struck by how she turned towards her experience of ill health in the closing months of her life. Her already strong commitment to her path took on a new life, a new verve. She introduced someone at a mitra ceremony, and at our last Going for Refuge meeting a few days before she died, she wanted to know about all of us, how we were all getting on. Dayavandana, she whose compassion is devotion, continues to be a presence in both Norwich and Great Yarmouth through the inspiring example she set, and for whom this talk is written. Where I first encountered the Buddha nature within, where I first began to actualise the most clear-sighted and creative response, was on the meditation cushions at a drop-in class at the London Buddhist Centre. For it was, and still is, on the meditation cushions that I open to my own heart, to love, to hate, to indifference. In her talk on Ratnasambhava, Karuna Chitta spoke of how actions have consequences. The opening verses of the Dhammapada ever remind us. We become what we think. Joy follows a pure thought, like a shadow that never leaves. If I do not sit to meditate every day, preferably mornings, when my mind is at its freshest, most receptive, most malleable, then there is a tautness, an anxiety, a self-protectionism that almost unconsciously wraps itself around my torso, diminishes confidence, trust, opens the door to fear. When I meditate, imagination and self-awareness come into play. If I develop mindfulness, put myself in someone else's shoes, feel their pain as if it were my own, then fearlessness can take me beyond the frozen wastes of horrified anxiety to a place where I can become bigger, meet the needs of the situation or person as far as I am able in that moment. To the extent that I can let go of attachment and self-preoccupation, can I respond from a place of compassion? Can I move beyond the separation of self and other? I experience these qualities of a Moga Siddhi, fearlessness and compassion in action, as being two sides of the same coin. When we meet someone or something with courage and with kindness, we inspire the same in others. Our fearlessness opens our heart to another, who in turn lets go of their own fears and responds from a place of metta. There is a boldness to courage, to compassionate action, that wears its colours brightly, lifts its head above the parapet. Qualities at the very heart of our bodhisattva vision, going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha for the benefit of all sentient beings. In developing our own fearlessness, we acquire confidence, deepen our faith, and inspire the same quality of fearlessness in others. From the Buddha's own life, one of the stories of compassionate action that I find moving is one where the Buddha's cousin, Devadatta, an ambitious and jealous man, made an attempt, one of several, on the Buddha's life. At that time, there was a savage elephant at Rajagaha called Nalagiri, a man-killer. Devadatta went into Rajagaha to the elephant stables. He said to the Mahouts, "We are known to the king and influential. When the monk Gotama comes down this road, let the elephant Nalagiri loose into the road." "Even so, Lord," they replied. Then, when it was morning, the Blessed One dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, he went into Rajagaha for alms with a number of bhikkhus. Then the Blessed One entered that road. The Mahouts saw him, and they turned the elephant Nalagiri loose into the road. The elephant saw the Blessed One coming in the distance. When he saw him, he raised his trunk, and with his ears and tail erect, he charged towards the Blessed One. The bhikkhus saw him coming in the distance. They said, "Lord, the savage elephant Nalagiri, the man-killer, is loose in the road. Lord, let the Blessed One turn back. Lord, let the Sublime One turn back." "Come, bhikkhus, do not be afraid. It is impossible. It cannot happen that anyone can take a perfect one's life by violence. When perfect ones attain final nibbana, it is not through violence on the part of another." A second and third time the bhikkhus said the same thing and received the same answer. Now at that time, people in the palaces and houses and huts were waiting in suspense. Those of them without faith or confidence, the unwise and indiscreet, said, "The great monk who is so handsome will get hurt by the elephant." And the faithful and confident, the wise and discreet, said, "Soon Tusker will be contending with Tusker." Then the Blessed One encompassed the elephant Nalagiri with thoughts of loving kindness. The elephant lowered his trunk, and he went up to the Blessed One and stood before him. The Blessed One stroked the elephant's forehead with his right hand and addressed him. "O elephant, do not attack a tusker, for it is hurtful to attack a tusker. There is no happy destiny beyond for one who kills a tusker." The elephant Nalagiri took the dust off the Blessed One's feet with his trunk and sprinkled it on his head, after which he retreated backwards for as long as the Blessed One was in sight. And so we sit this evening in the presence of a Moga city, whose own unwavering strength and fortitudes holds a mirror up to our own capacity to engage in fearless action, not least in the area of fearless friendship, or perhaps at times fierce friendship. For true spiritual friendship involves all of ourselves open and engaged with all of another. We cannot compartmentalise ourselves as we can, say, with common interest friendships. Spiritual friendship insists that we give a voice to those parts of ourselves we would but hide through fear of non-acceptance. The hungry ghost realm that Suryadarshini spoke of last week is one I too share, as no doubt many of us do. The animal realm, an overindulgence in food, films or whatever. The ambitions of the realm of the Titans, even on a subtle level of comparing ourselves. All of these denote an undercurrent of fear. For they are all nothing more than feeding the ego, feeding the craving for self, whatever form they take. And so through friendship, through allowing our vulnerable sides to be seen, we can begin to nurse the wounded, damaged parts of ourselves. Friendship challenges. It can be a hall of mirrors from which there is no escape, however long you practice, however far you travel. The Dhammapada. One who conquers himself is greater than another who conquers 1,000 times 1,000 men on the battlefield. Be victorious over yourself and not over others. When you attain victory over yourself, not even the gods can turn it into defeat. In her talk on Akshobhya, Vajragupta explained the symbolism of the Vajra. The diamond thunderbolt, energy that transforms negative emotions of greed, hatred, and delusion into generosity, love, wisdom. The double Vajra is a symbol of complete integration, harmony, balance, equilibrium, the realization of all our potential. In Indian Buddhist cosmology, the double Vajra underpins the entire universe, in turn mirrored within us, within the very depths of who we are. Only through a cultivation of all aspects of ourselves, the strengths we gladly exhibit, the frightened corners of our mind we would but keep under lock and key, do we come to a point of complete, total fearlessness? Are we able to act with all of ourselves fully present? Hence, Shraddha, or faith, can only be effective if balanced by prajna, or wisdom. Concentration, or samadhi, of itself will be limited if not suffused with virya or energy. The central anchor that unites all of these is smriti or mindfulness. With all of our energies individually and collectively united, we can create something greater than the sum total of all our efforts. Susan Jeffers again. When we are concerned with something bigger than ourselves, our fears are greatly diminished. We sense ourselves as being part of a bigger whole. We are not alone, and we, perhaps for the first time, are aware of a sense of purpose. The Buddhist Lama Govinda speaks of the mystery of a Moga Siddhi, in which the inner and the outer world, the visible and the invisible, are united, and in which the spiritual takes bodily shape, and the body becomes an exponent of the spirit. For a Moga Siddhi is the lord of the great transformation, whose vehicle is the winged man, the man in transition towards a new dimension of consciousness. The union of opposites is reinforced in the presence of Shangshan creatures, half man, half bird, who clash symbols, bringing alive an energy that comes through sound. Bodhi Vajra's beautiful puja speaks of energy flowing like the wind, accomplishing all. I make offerings of voices, saxophones and drums, and the roaring of the wind in forest trees. A Moga Siddhi is associated with the element of air and the wind. Sound communicates its own energy, can inspire, move us. Whether it is a quietly spoken text in a hushed shrine room, or a cacophony of wind instruments at a Tibetan festival. A Moga Siddhi's colour, deep green, suggests new life, renewal, perennial growth. Green is soothing, a colour of healing, caring, nurturing. In contemporary culture, it is the symbol of recycling, the Green Party, renewable energy. For decades, a breed of American comic book superheroes, the Green Lanterns, exhibited a variety of extraordinary powers, fighting evil with the aid of green rings, disempowering their foes with green objects such as chains, the ring's power symbolized by a green light. One of the oaths taken by these superheroes in the 1940s speaks of its own dharmic qualities. In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. We are drawn to superheroes because they touch something within ourselves. We all aspire to boldness, to make a positive difference to the world. Sheldon Cooper, the pivotal character in the TV series Big Bang Theory, wore Green Lantern t-shirts, an overt contrast between the hero he aspired to be and his own socially inept struggles and confusion. The glass wall of Asperger's syndrome that separated Sheldon from his peers, and that I too share, now openly so, since being diagnosed with Asperger's in 2013. And so, for my first talk as a Dharma trainee, I too sport a Green Lantern t-shirt. Acknowledgement of the path of fearlessness that lies before me. My journey, in many ways, just beginning. But what happened with the swimming? The 10-year-old frightened of water? Well, I just kept going. And going. And going. And when, eventually, my fingers touched the far side of the pool, I felt a surge of joy, elation, freedom, as if I had become bigger. The Green Buddha had been sitting on my shoulder, and I didn't know it. Or at least not for a few decades. When I visualise Amoga City, I seek to become the very qualities that manifest in the Buddha of the North. Qualities that of themselves embrace Akshobhya's equanimity, Ratnasambhava's generosity, Amitabha's compassion, and Vairochana's spaciousness. Without constantly cultivating these qualities, the vows I took at my recent ordination, for the attainment of enlightenment, for the benefit of all beings, become meaningless, just empty words. My name, Arya D, noble wisdom, however beautiful, becomes just a name. To live my path, my name, I must become them. So we can close our eyes again and return to the midnight blue sky. We can find ourselves again in the pine forest of the northern hemisphere and revisit the shapes and sounds that unnerved us. But now we experience them as inseparable from ourselves. They are our own demons. We invite them in as welcome guests. We bring them on side. We fuse them with our love, our wisdom. We learn to let go and just be with what is. The Bengali poet Rabindranath Tagore. Let me not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not look for the allies in life's battlefield, but to my own strength. Let me not crave in anxious fear to be saved, but hope for the patience to win my freedom. Thank you.